2. Your Friday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. One leg of the roundtable has arrived. Brian McDaniel from Wrong About Everything. Good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
What's up, homie? How we doing?
Well, I have never in my entire life heard you say sup, homie.
I was trying to channel a little Kanye.
You know what?
I don't know if he does homie.
You know what, Sam? John and I have something very special, and I'd appreciate it if you didn't try to interfere.
Yeah, stay out of it.
I see that the competitiveness is already beginning this morning.
Speaking of that, you want to get your picks in for the Friday News Quiz happening at 8:30. Tweet at us who you think's going to win, Brian McDaniel, Brian Miller, or producer Sam Sansevier. Make sure to use the hashtag TCNT when you tweet so we see it. Everybody who makes the correct prediction will be in a drawing for a pair of tickets to this weekend's Vikings game.
We were in the middle of Sam's top five. Let's get right back into it.
Number 3.
The Fusion GPS co-founder is going to invoke the constitutional rights not to testify.
Isn't that convenient?
Mm-hmm.
From the Hill, lawyers for Glenn Simpson, co-founder of Fusion GPS, told the head of the House Judiciary Committee yesterday that his client will invoke his constitutional rights not to testify. That's defying a GOP-issued subpoena seeking to compel him to give a closed-door deposition. Mm-hmm. The lawyers told...
Don't want to do that. Don't want to do that.
He's like, nope.
They can find out some bad stuff.
The lawyers told Judiciary Committee Chairman Bob Goodlatte, in an electronic letter that Simpson will not participate.
In an electronic letter?
In an electronic letter.
Is that just an email?
That would be an email.
So, I'm going to send so him an weird.
Letter.
So strange.
Does anybody have any electronic stamps?
I think that's what they called them in war games.
So strange.
Matthew Broderick sent an electronic letter.
This electronic letter claimed that Simpson will not participate in the committee's inquiry because it is not designed to discover the truth.
Well, and, you know, the only way to win is not to play, so.
Nice.
Nice pull.
War games reference.
Thank you.
That was tight, homie.
That was good.
Lawyers for Simpson wrote, according to a copy of this electronic letter obtained by The Hill, consistent with a September 27th, 2018 letter we sent to you, Mr. Simpson, whose testimony is a matter of public record, will not be participating in a confidential deposition before this committee. He will instead invoke his constitutional rights not to testify under the First and Fifth Amendments of the Constitution.
I saw this story as a, and it's just perception, but I saw this story as sort of the signal of the shift back over to the Russia collusion stuff, because I don't know when the last time we had Mueller's name mentioned in the mainstream media in the past, like, what, 2 months? But you know, I mean, you know it's coming.
Well, yeah. The whole Kavanaugh thing is done and
right.
over. They got to move back to something. Got to pivot to something else.
We got to get past Kanye. Right. Once we get past Kanye, then you'll see it. You know, right before the midterms or right before Halloween.
Well, we'll know whether this person really has something to say if all of a sudden they start getting a deal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. Lawyer extraordinaire is not
Number
here.
But. 4.
Witchcraft spells are being cast following the Kavanaugh confirmation.
That's where it's gone now. That's how
this is where we are.
Yeah, this is peak stupid now on Kavanaugh.
I am never predicting peak stupid again.
Are we peak stupid on Kavanaugh?
Never predicting peak stupid again. There are levels of stupid that I am unable to comprehend when it comes to how people are reacting to the Trump administration.
There was also the story where he went out and fed homeless people. Did you see that one? And then that was easy and predictable. That criticism. Oh, he's just doing that for show.
He's been doing that for years.
He's just doing it for show.
Right when Trump announced him as his nominee as his pick, there was a profile of him, and I remember specifically reading that that is something that he has done for years and years.
Drew, he was just looking for more potential victims.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
From the Daily Wire.
Jeez.
The witch trial of Justice
the Zodiac
Brett
killer?
Kavanaugh.
Sorry.
It's fine. The witch trial of Justice Brett Kavanaugh has inspired actual witches, which is not a real thing, to cast spells in his name, including the organization of a Hex Kavanaugh event.
Why would you want to do that? I mean, like these people are sincere, right? Like, I'm gonna take them at their word. They're sincere. They're stupid. They're probably a little crazy, but they're sincere in their belief that they're a witch and that they can hex people. Like, he's on the Supreme Court. Why would you want to hex him now?
Oh, right.
You should be like, let's cast spells to try to make him a better person. right? If we think he's this bad person with horrible judgment, whatever, you know, let's cast spells of love and peace of mind to try to improve his temperament that we're so concerned about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Sam says this isn't a real thing, which is, you know, extraordinarily short-sighted. I was turned into a newt once.
A newt?
I got better.
You are a newt. According to Vox, many quasi-religious rituals are making the rounds in the halls of social media that are meant to help self-identified witches process trauma, anger, and grief in the wake of Kavanaugh's confirmation to the Supreme Court. One popular spell is the gratitude spell, authored by Instagram user at Celeste Height for the pagan and political organization Witch the Vote that focuses on feminist causes.
It goes all the way back to the beginnings of Instagram.
Witch the Vote.
Vox reported,
oh my God.
In this open-ended spell, participants must or might choose to make a sigil, a sacred sign, on the paper or vary their tribute to Ford in accordance with their own personal experiences and history. They might, if they so choose, send their note to Ford directly.
You know what? Whatever floats your boat, man. Yeah. If it makes you feel better, whatever.
It's no secret that witchcraft and feminism go together like Hillary Clinton and Planned Parenthood, according to this article from the Daily Wire.
It's kind of funny.
But the practice has especially seen an uptick during the Trump era.
Yeah.
Since day one of his administration, these feminist witches have performed a variety of spells and hexes to bind the president from implementing policies they dislike. Considering that Kavanaugh made it to the Supreme Court, the spells are clearly not working.
Well, they just said they didn't spell hard enough.
Well,
they need to spell harder.
Well, and the obviously the important word there is feminist witches, because if you're a conservative witch like Christine O'Donnell from Delaware, you know, then you have to do a whole ad, you know, trying to disavow it.
Number 5.
Union leaders say we stand with Keith Ellison after abuse allegations.
Of course they do. Of course they do.
Of course.
Of course they do. They're craven political opportunists.
Yep.
From Fox 9, Minnesota labor leaders who support DFL Attorney General candidate Keith Ellison say their endorsements haven't wavered despite allegations that Ellison abused an ex-girlfriend. Bill McCarthy, president of the Minnesota AFL-CIO, said, "Our membership knows that Keith has stood with them over the years on every front, and we're going to stand with him now.
And we're terrified to pull our endorsement."
Ellison is trying to move past the allegations from ex-girlfriend Karen Monahan that he physically and emotionally abused her, which Ellison still denies. Polls indicate the race between Ellison and Republican Doug Wardlow is pretty tight, even as DFL candidates hold leads in three other statewide contests this fall. Ellison hammered Republican opponent Doug Wardlow yesterday, saying Wardlow would stand with President Donald Trump and big businesses instead of protecting workers. The DFL has pointed to a Wardlow campaign flyer that suggests that Wardlow would defend President Trump's agenda.
Ooh.
Oh, no.
So controversial.
Oh, no. Wardlow said in an interview outside his Burnsville campaign offices that he would neither defend nor try to block the Trump administration. He said, "That's preposterous. Keith Ellison, he wants to talk about anything other than the domestic abuse allegations against him." Ellison has held events away from the Twin Cities in recent days focused on labor unions and voting rights as Wardlow's campaign launched a TV ad criticizing him over the abuse allegations.
And that little nugget right there, I don't think gets enough attention. Wardlow has in a race for an office that the DFL has held for close to 50 years, right? Mm-hmm. Doug Wardlow, the candidate, has raised enough money to run TV ads for the Attorney General's race as a Republican. That's pretty stunning. I mean, if you really think about it, I don't know. I don't recall ever seeing TV ads for the Attorney General's race in past elections.
Well, no.
At least not for the Republican side.
No. I mean, I remember when Jeff Johnson actually ran, there was an ad at the very end, but it was very quick.
Yeah.
And it was not, you know, there wasn't a ton of production value there. So I've seen them, but not with, like, you know, the normal production value that you've seen. I don't know that money would have been there, but for there being blood in the water.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
The way that there is.
Absolutely.
But I think we have to give Doug Wardlow a lot of credit for running a very, you know, regimented campaign where there have not been a lot of negatives that he has given other people to attack him on. And you know, one thing about you can say about Karen Monahan, who is the you know, alleged victim for Ellison, she, if you follow her on Twitter, she's not giving up.
No, she's still out there, you know, saying what she feels like she needs to say.
Well, and there was a friend of ours in D.C., and she posted this on Twitter, and there is no information to say that one had anything to do with the other, but they were quick to point out that she was actually in Washington, D.C. this past week, and she has continued to spend
a fair amount of time.
Yeah, to be vocal. So, and again, the assumption there is potentially, well, maybe if that video does exist, maybe it still will come out at the last minute. I don't personally believe if it does exist, that's going to happen. I would think that if she was going to, she would have by now if it does indeed exist.
I'm not even sure the video even matters anymore. I mean, it's been this allegation, you know, that has been out there for a long time. It's gotten a fair amount of coverage. I think most people know of it.
Right.
Know of the allegation, and they either believe it or they don't, right? I mean, would a video at this point in the race convince somebody who has made up their mind that they're going to vote for Keith Ellison to abstain from vote? I don't know, because most of the people that are voting for Keith Ellison are voting for it under the guise not so much of, I think Keith is awesome, they're voting for it under the guise of, I really don't want Doug Wardlow to win.
If it does exist, and again, this is, I'm going to put it out there, pure speculation, right? If it does exist and we take what Karen Monahan said as truth, when that was initially talked about with the video, she talked about how it was embarrassing for everybody. Mm. I always kind of took that as that video shows evidence of what Ellison did, but it also has an element in there of her that she doesn't want people to see for whatever reason. So to what you were saying,
I took it the same way.
I wonder if the video in and of itself shows a bit of a, nuanced is a bad word, but an event that took place where people could look at it and go, well,
yeah,
you've got two parties here that are both very upset and acting inappropriately.
The one thing I keep going back to that doesn't really get talked about anymore is that initial Facebook post from her son. Not from her, not anything she said, from her son. And the way, and the words that he chose, and the way that he described the video and how he felt, you know, after he saw the video. I mean, he made that post almost in a, it seemed to me, I read it, like in a state of rage. Like, he saw this video, again, taking him at face value. He saw this video, he saw these things being done to his mom, and was like, I can't be silent anymore. I mean, that's how this whole thing started. It didn't start with Karen Monahan. I mean, she dropped little...
She was putting things out into the ether, but
she wasn't coming right out and saying anything. It wasn't until her son made that long Facebook post that it became, oh my God, this is serious.
I mean, I think I disagree with you a little bit. I think if the video exists and if it comes out, I think there are a lot of Democrats who are uneasy about voting for Keith Ellison, but will. I think that if they see the video and see that not only did the DFL party lie to them, did the outside law firm that did the investigation fudge it, that not only did Keith Ellison just look them in the eye and lie, I think that would not get them to vote for Ellison, might get them to not vote at all.
Yeah.
And I think we are seeing that. The thing that bothers me about not seeing the video, and I think I agree with John 100%, that, you know, if it exists, there's stuff in there she doesn't want people to see, and I can understand that. But being the prolific tweeter that she is, being someone who desperately wants to be vindicated on this, the video would do that. And if there is evidence that exists, I know she might have reasons to not show it, but she wants to be vindicated, the video would do that.
Real quick, good morning, comedian Brian Miller.
Hello.
Nice to see you, sir. Getting back to the election part of it, I want to double back because, and to Sam's top five and how close the race is, I feel like we've gotten away from the dynamics of the race and how it was originally compared to what it is now. And what I mean by that is when Keith Ellison initially announced that he was going to run for AG, we had all the commentary about why would he do that? Why would he leave Congress? How does he expect to win? And the conventional wisdom was always, well, he's going to focus on that particular district, that core DFL that's going to help propel him, even if he doesn't get outstate Minnesota to go and vote for him.
Right.
After the allegations came out, we kind of got away from that in talking about it. And it makes sense now the race would be close, because in that initial commentary, we all kind of discussed that the big question mark was outstate Minnesota. And now you have a circumstance of the allegation, true or not, that is going to have an impact on this election, and it might just be enough for Doug Wardlow to be able to win it, even if Ellison does still have that concentration of voters in that one particular district.
Oh, I think Wardlow is going to win. I mean, if you ask me today, I had to place a bet, I would absolutely pick Wardlow to win this race.
I think Wardlow is going to win. I think the Republicans were banking on Keith Ellison, even before the allegations, they were banking on Keith Ellison dragging down the DFL ticket as a whole.
Still could happen.
It could happen. I'm not predicting it will.
Yeah, I won't go so far.
Not that they're all going to win, but I don't think that Ellison, if they lose, I don't think it's Ellison that put the nail in the coffin.
Yeah, I won't go so far as to predict it, but it absolutely could happen. And that to me, going back to the video, that's the biggest impact the video could have. Like, if the video does get released between now and November, that could have enough of an impact to drag down other DFLers on the ticket. I don't think it's going to change the outcome of the Keith Ellison Wardlow race much.
Without the video, Ellison has to answer for Ellison, but maybe not everybody else does. But if the video comes out, everybody's going to have an answer.
That's a great point. Yeah. That finally all those people that are pressuring Tina Smith and Amy Klobuchar and Tim Walz to make a comment or take some sort of stand on Ellison, and right now they're able to just sort of brush it off, and they're not being compelled to come up with an answer or to withdraw an endorsement or to reject his endorsement. Right? With the video, suddenly that becomes very real. That's a great point.
Well, and Brian, I think that also speaks to the response that we've gotten from the DFL and them zeroing in when it comes to the investigation on the video. Because we all kind of went, oh, they're using the video. Well, they've given themselves an out. They basically said, in absence of this alleged video, we're going to go ahead and move forward because we don't find these allegations to be that substantiated. So if the video were to come out, they have a way to go, well, We were specific, and the video is there now, so we are allowed to go and change our minds. 651-989-5855 is the phone number. Use that hashtag TCNT on Twitter. So do we think that the reason why we haven't seen Governor Mark Dayton in so long is because he was getting ready to undergo his third back surgery today?
No.
Okay. He is getting ready to undergo his third back surgery today, though.
That's a lot of back surgeries.
Yeah. They say once you get one, you get them, you never stop.
Doesn't happen. Like tattoos.
Or Pringles.
Or for Nick Sirwa's open heart surgeries. Oh, sorry. I'm going to bring the house down.
You can vote about Nick's height. It's kind of a jerk move to vote about.
I've had two. I'm allowed.
That's your word.
If I'd only had one, I wouldn't have been allowed to, but I've had two.
We're announcing Brian McDaniel as the permanent replacement for Nick Sirwa.
Dayton's office released a statement saying the surgery is similar to procedures that Dayton had back in 2012 and 2015, which fused vertebrae in his lower back.
So they're not all fused yet? They're going to fuse the last few remaining?
He's just going to be stiff walking around? He's just
Sounds like it hurts. I know that.
Yeah, that does not sound like
it. No, it doesn't sound pleasant.
No. He's going to undergo general anesthesia during the surgery. He'll be hospitalized for a few days, but he'll be in frequent contact with his staff and commissioners.
To do what? He hasn't been doing anything lately.
Well, he might have to declare another day. He might have to...
Who's coming to town?
Sam, pull up the upcoming concert schedule.
I think we got Phil Collins coming in next week.
Let's find out.
Ooh.
What was the last one?
I can feel this endorsement coming in the air tonight.
I don't know. It was something dumb. I can't remember.
Studio day.
It was something. Someone after Taylor Swift. I can't remember who it was most recently that he declared a day for. Someone who had a big concert.
Coming up, an update on the homeless encampment. We had a story earlier this week. In which they're going to be moving a portion of those at the camp to a separate location. It's not going to be all of them. But we're also back around to, and I've only seen MinnPost covering this, the discussion of the supervised injection sites has come back up again. And there's still some talk of pushing that. So we will give you details on both of those stories coming up on Twin Cities News Talk, Justice and Drew.
But first, we want to put a grand in your hand. Listen to Twin Cities News Talk all day long for your chance to win $1,000 every single hour. This hour, your keyword is money. Text money to 200-200. Standard message and data rates do apply.
Justice.
We were talking movies. Shocking! During the break here on Twin Cities News Talk, Justice and Drew. We got the round table in studio. Brian McDaniel and Brian Miller. You went to go see the Bad Times at the El Royale. Nothing but glowing praises coming from
Bad Times at the AMC Southdale 16. That's my capsule review.
I'm fine theater, though. Drew's going to go see it, and he'll find out whether or not you know that assessment is
maybe
first man. Know. See first man.
I might have to make a switch now.
I'm going today at 3 o'clock to see First Man. Really looking forward to seeing that. Wanted to bring up just real quick that the Soyuz rocket and the astronauts.
Yeah,
that story was incredible. Did you guys hear about this? All right, so a U.S. astronaut and a Russian cosmonaut were forced to make an emergency landing after their Russian Soyuz rocket malfunctioned on its way to the International Space Station. So shortly after takeoff in Kazakhstan, Nick Hague and Alexei Ovchinin reported a problem with the rocket's booster. They were forced into a ballistic descent with their collapsible landing a few hundred miles north of where they were, eventually picked up by rescuers. They have footage of it. It is shocking they did not die.
Seems like something straight out of a movie.
I was going to say, The Rock is going to be in this movie, right? The only question is, Kevin Hart, Jason Statham, who are we going to pair with The Rock?
Wahlberg. This is a Wahlberg.
Oh, no. Yeah, will he be the Russian? I can't handle his Russian accent.
I think Wahlberg's got to be in this one.
Here's the thing about with this particular story, though. It ends up becoming, if they do a movie, it would have to be like Sully. Like, I always wondered, how in the world are they going to pull off a two-hour movie where the plane takes off and then comes right back down again?
Yeah.
And then they did.
Yeah.
And it worked out really well.
Twice. Which was brilliant. I was like, I'll just show it twice.
Yeah.
Very smart.
Yeah, but you can watch the footage. It goes up. You see the big explosion. They have in the capsule shots of them when it happens, and they're just being rattled around like a couple just of pinballs inside the capsule, and then they ended up surviving.
It's amazing they survived this.
Yeah.
Well, by Twilight Zone logic, they should think they're on an alien planet and get into some sort of cannibalistic feud before they realize they're still in Florida.
Right.
You still have time, plenty of time, 1 hour away to get your picks in as to who you think is going to win the Friday news quiz, Brian McDaniel, Brian Miller, or producer Sam Sansevier, defending champion.
Thank you.
Producer
I'd like the record to reflect that other than that one time, I'm undefeated.
Other than that one time?
Other than that one time.
You are undefeated.
You can't say that. You're not undefeated.
Other than that one time, he is.
You're not a lawyer.
Other than those like three or four times, I'm also undefeated.
That's also accurate.
Yeah.
Not as impressive, but accurate. Use the hashtag TCNT, make your pick as to who you think is going to win. Everybody who picks correctly is going to win a pair of tickets to see Vikings Cardinals this Sunday at US Bank Stadium. Very cool.
Now, okay, so before going into that game, what can you tell me what my expectations should be? Because I was so I was so off the mark last week.
Vikings game?
Yeah.
Oh, Vikings should have no problem.
Okay, all right.
They shouldn't have had any problem with the Bills.
Yeah.
Okay.
They did.
Well, that I know. But
Arizona is a bad team. They have a good defense. They've got got two fantastic defensive players whose names are escaping me at the moment, but it's a lineman and a defensive back. Really good. So they've got a solid defense.
Who's their quarterback now?
Josh Rosen.
It's Josh Rosen.
Rookie. So.
Yeah. Okay.
It was Sam Bradford.
Yeah, he's like third string now, right?
Well, because going into the Bears game, Bradford played half the game and then got pulled and they put in Rosen. So Rosen's, a competent quarterback.
He's not bad.
Though a rookie.
For a rookie. This should be, I don't know what the line is, but, I would feel comfortable picking Vikings -6 easy.
Except that this would be the trap game if the Buffalo Minnesota game.
Yes, that's true.
That's a good point.
Because you would assume. Now, the Vikings didn't play really as well as I thought they would play against, they played well. But
defending Super Bowl champions and on the road.
See, that's my problem. I went in last week thinking that was supposed to be an easy win, and it wasn't. So.
No, but Philadelphia played horrible for most of that game, and they almost won.
Super Bowl champions at Lincoln Financial Field. No. That's not an easy game for any
team. It's not an easy game, but if you are dominating the way the Vikings did, you don't almost lose. And Philadelphia played terrible. That's not the point right now. Just so you know. The
point is you're wrong.
No.
Yeah.
The point is that the Bears are going to destroy the Dolphins, and you're going to buy me dinner.
Accurate.
That's all that matters.
I do think that a bear could beat a fight with a fish. So I'm
They're
on
not,
Brian's
first
side.
It's not mammals. It's not a fish.
Fish are delicious.
Can we bring Bradford back to be our kicker?
You could try. couldn't hurt.
He might be the only person who would be worse than anybody we have.
Right?
Really, yeah. Made a kick.
His leg doesn't work.
Didn't Paul Allen say that he was going to powwow with like all the kickers get together for powwows? Didn't he talk about that last week?
He said like kickers are like a pretty tight fraternity.
Yeah.
Before every game, the kickers from each team tend to
talk about how they suck.
Tend to get together
because they've all been horrible this season, right? I mean, isn't it like across the board in the NFL kickers have just been failing left and right?
What was it, like Green Bay's kicker?
Yeah,
he missed five kicks.
Mason Crosbar.
All right, out of the Star Tribune, a bit of a recap here. A dozen people living in the massive homeless camp in South Minneapolis will move into a Minneapolis fourplex after the Hennepin County allocated more than, it's a combination of private dollars, taxpayer money, and government funding, $214,000 for emergency housing. The camp dwellers will begin to move in next week, according to Michael Goss, the CEO of AICDC. And county officials said the tenants will mostly be American Indian women and children. So the home can house anywhere between 12 and 16 people, according to the Hennepin County Deputy Commissioner. County staff at the camp would find and refer people to the other organization who would then be screened to live in this particular home. So this is completely separate from the moving of the camp in total to that other location that we're supposed to spend $2.2 million on. And the story they basically worded as they're chipping away at the people in the homeless camp with this particular move. I feel like, and we've talked about this several times, and I don't know if either Brian can shed light on this, because I know the City Pages has done some stuff on this too. But I feel like the dynamic of the people in the camp hasn't been talked about nearly as much. Because I know there was one particular story that highlighted how it started from the community that is right next to where the homeless camp is. Like there were individuals in that community that got booted in sort of a... what I called, and I'm not trying to be insensitive, but what I called like a Native American HOA of that community, like kicked them out and they moved and started the camp in and of itself. Is that right?
Yeah, there's a very large community right off. I want to say Blue Earth. I want to say
Little Earth.
Right. Yeah, I used to live right back down there. Yeah, I mean, the tricky thing about it is that it is in a certain way kind of intentional community. I mean, obviously it was born of unfortunate circumstance, but it was like people who were in these circumstances, like, we should stick together. And so then sort of fragmenting them is, in a certain way, kind of contrary to their wishes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I truly believe in a social safety net. I think that as a society, we have decided that we are going to help those who cannot help themselves if they legitimately can't do that. What I continue to not understand about this, though, is who is dictating the terms? It almost feels like the people who are in the camp are in control, and I'm uncomfortable with that.
I'm not
uncomfortable helping them and realizing that they are in dire straits, but it almost seems like they are telling government what to do rather than the other way around while taking government funds.
Under no circumstances should they be in a position where they can start making demands onto Hennepin County or the city of Minneapolis government, whoever is reaching into trying helping them. And that is exactly what has happened. The leadership, specifically in Minneapolis, it feels like they are more concerned about any sort of negative PR stemming from this than they are actually trying to find a solution.
Well, we saw, with the occupation of the 4th Precinct, we saw that when Mayor Hodges did her job, she was vilified by the progressives. And I think that, Mayor Fry is not looking to make that same mistake.
I think that's a very astute point.
There's a few more details on this. We will get into the calls to have a supervised injection site for those that are dealing with drugs. By the way, do you guys know there is no location in America that does this?
I thought San Francisco had.
We'll get into it. Getting into the story, you find out that I think they were the ones that were closest to it and may have tried. We'll give you some details, and we'll also be getting into this Screamtown story, the controversy surrounding Screamtown and where that currently rests. It's all coming up on Twin Cities News Talk.
Justice in.
It is the Friday Roundtable here on Twin Cities News Talk with Justice Andrew. We have the news quiz coming up 1 hour from now.
Make your pick on who you think is going to win, Brian Miller, Brian McDaniel, or Sam.
Me.
Handicapped.
Yeah, we should loop the Bryans in on this conversation that we had earlier.
Oh, I heard.
Sam, turn your mic off.
No.
I don't like that look.
I think there's I think there's death.
I'm sorry I said that. Sam, you know, has a bit of an advantage because she's on the show all week long.
A bit,
you know.
It's fine. It's fine. I barely listen to anyway.
So we had suggested perhaps, you know, a handicap for Sam, you know, starting her with a bit of a handicap to offset the advantage. And I would welcome your input.
Well, it's a handy capability, but yes.
Well, I heard you guys discussing that when I was driving in. And what I thought is that, you know, it's so difficult, you know, for Nick and the Bryans to, you know, stay up on this as much as she does, is that we should get first crack at answering it. And if we get it wrong or don't have an answer, then Sam can answer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Why?
She can steal.
How many?
Like the Family Feud
Brian,
steal.
Yeah.
Brian,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure that you've won just as much as I have. Why should I need a handicap?
Hey, just because I've overcome adversity doesn't mean that you and I are the same.
I have a solution. Hey, hey, Drew.
Yeah.
She only gets to answer every other question.
Okay. Oh, there you go. That, you know what? That's nothing but compromise right there.
This is just because I'm a woman. It's
that's
because I'm a woman. Isn't
well,
it?
Maybe, you know what? Maybe that's your handicap.
Fair point.
I'm already handicapped. I think I should get a.
That's true. Believe women.
Oh, you guys are going to get mail.
We know we only give her 66% of the points that Brian.
Yeah, she gets a sixth of a point every time she gets something right.
No, you're going to get electronic mail on that.
I want an electronic letter. I want an arbitrary point for all the sexism, please. Putting right, in
sexism
my request.
Point.
651-989-5855. Hennepin County spending $214,000 to move a dozen of people in the homeless encampment in South Minneapolis to a separate residence. And we talked about yesterday, they are going to be sprucing the place up, apparently. They were very keen to mention how they were going to make it very nice for the individuals that were going to be moving in.
That warms my heart.
Brian McDaniel, you made a comment, and I agree, of the people at the camp dictating what was happening.
Yeah.
It based off of what we've read, James Cross, he's the founder of the Natives Against Heroin. He's become the de facto leader of that camp, and he's been the one who has been for the most part having the discussions with city officials on what they should do. What it sounds like is, and again, the media, in my opinion, hasn't done a very good job of sort of breaking all of this down. It does sound like it started with this particular group of people that left this community, but then it grew with a lot of people from the outside coming in once they had sort of allowed it to continue.
Well, they were evicted. The first people were literally evicted, so it wasn't a choice.
Right.
But then it was like some people who were also on the street. Susan Dew wrote a really good City Pages story about it. It's been maybe about a month ago. I would recommend checking that out if you want to get kind of the history of it, and it laid it out nicely. But then it was like people who were already on the street were kind of in the area, so like, well, you're here, you know, and then took its own momentum, you know? Yeah. It just, you know, once you get enough people there that it was visible, the visibility became its own, essentially, advertisement for the camp.
And what it sounds like now, it sounds like they're trying to move the core group out to a particular location and then take the individuals who may have came to the party afterwards and set them up at another spot. That's what it's sounding like. That raises the questions on whether or not this is how this whole thing should have been handled in the first place. I tend to believe that Minneapolis man-child mayor Jacob Fry exacerbated the problem.
Yeah.
It sounded like if they had gotten on top of it at the beginning and even gone the route that they're going now, not that I necessarily agree with it, but even gone the route they're going now when it comes to the individuals who initially set up there, it would have been a drastically easier situation to deal with. Right. But that's not what they did.
Right. He was, again, like I said, I think, you know, very concerned about bad PR. I think Brian McDaniel made a very good point in that he probably learned a lesson from the way that the 4th Precinct occupation was handled. Like, when they actually went in there and tried to clear it out, they caught a ton of heat
from
their base, you know, from the activist community.
I think Mayor Hodges is not Mayor Hodges because of how that was handled.
Big, large part of it, absolutely. Totally agree. So I think that plays into it, and I also thought he saw an opportunity to use this to, because one of his big priorities is the push for affordable housing.
Yeah.
And he sees an opportunity to get a story like this on the front page of the Star Tribune day in and day out. It's in a very visible spot, high traffic, you know, area, rush hour traffic. You got millions of cars going through there every single day. And it's right there in their face. And I think that in his mind reinforces and supports his agenda.
651-989-5855. We'll go and talk with Mark in Ramsey. Thanks for holding on, Mark, and welcome to Twin Cities News Talk.
Yeah, hey, thanks for my call. I'll make this quick, guys. If this encampment is on the Little Earth land, then it would actually be on the White Earth Indian Reservation, which is a sovereign nation in itself. So the negotiations have to come from the nation itself of the White Earth Band of Ojibwe people.
Yeah, I don't.
I think
it's not on the land, though.
Yeah,
it's not actually on. It's very near.
Very near, yeah.
But it is a roadway, the way the city essentially owns a median strip.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
It's on,
but it's very near. You're correct.
According to when we had Rich Stanek on talking about this, it's on state property.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's on. Yeah. It's technically the encampment currently is on state property, and then Rich Stanek, of course, made the astute point of where's Governor Dayton? Where are the state troopers? I mean, why isn't the state more involved in figuring this out
or in getting the housing situation squared off or something? Yeah.
In the back, using the Little Earth housing complex and the homeless camp as the backdrop of this story from MinnPost, Minneapolis public health officials are scrambling for answers to the city's opioid crisis on a larger level. Social service workers are fanning out each day to distribute clean needles and Narcan. That's the drug that can fight the effects of opioids to people living in the tents. Researchers and elected officials are discussing long-term solutions. We've talked about this before. It's come back up. Among the possibilities, government-sanctioned facilities, also known as supervised injection sites, where people would be able to use heroin or other drugs while healthcare workers make sure they stay alive. Though such programs operate in other cities around the world, none have been implemented in the U.S. yet. Advocates in more than a dozen cities, including San Francisco, Seattle, Denver, and Philadelphia, have all been looking to launch the first, even as federal authorities are promising swift action in response if any of those local governments actually go and move forward.
I was going to say that I thought that did happen in Baltimore, but then I thought again, and that was just on the wire.
Well, I was going to say, you're thinking of Amsterdam on the wire.
Amsterdam on the wire.
Well, apparently, too, there is already a movement to change... to change what they're calling them to try to gain support. So
yeah, the idea of a supervised injection site doesn't sound very appealing.
Sounds sort of Soylent Greeny, doesn't it? It sounds like you check in and you don't check out.
All right,
there'd be a lot of NIMBYism going on. I don't want one of those around.
No,
here.
No one's going to want that in there. No.
So let's have a little fun. So we still have safe. There is still site. What word are they putting in the middle instead of injection? To try to make it more palatable to the American public.
Well, what do you call it when like you take your little kids to get their? It's like you're going to get an ouchie.
I was thinking dosing.
Yeah, you say dosing. Any guesses?
Unicorn.
Safe unicorn site, Drew. Any guesses?
A little ouchie.
A little ouchie place. It's something that we've actually all done already this morning. I can tell because we all have our cups and our thirst. Consumption.
Oh,
safe.
Oh.
Consumption site.
Yeah, that doesn't sound nearly as foreboding.
No, it really doesn't.
Well, actually, there's a high percentage of people who contract consumption there. So,
council member Jeremiah Ellison says, "What I like about this option of a supervised injection site is that it's an option that, if done in conjunction with shelter or housing, could really help folks," he said at a Minneapolis City Council meeting last month. "I'm fearful now that we'll get a lot of folks housed or placed in an emergency sense, and then because the rules around chemical dependency drug use were basically setting them up to fail." This is kind of a argument for it that repeats itself. There's a very specific reason why these cities haven't done it yet. It's illegal. And you have authorities who have been saying that if you do this, we're going to come and hold you accountable for this. The policies of what they're trying to push are BYOD. They're bring your own drugs. They have supervised officials there that are going to give you safe needles and let you doing it. The concerns that people have are, one, it's illegal. Two, there's a large concern about it destroying the surrounding communities, which they have evidence of in other places around the world where it's happened. And the data that has been gleaned from other injection sites in other parts of the country is that as few as 10% of the individuals that use them actually go and seek any treatment, and the percentage of individuals that actually get successful treatment is infinitesimally or whatever lower. It's way lower than that.
Well, and one thing I just want to add is that a friend of mine has, and this is probably not the right term, but has adopted a family there and has kind of chronicled the attempt to assist this one family on Facebook with a fair degree of specificity. The theme that runs through all of these posts are the family wants and asks for help, but ultimately it is their addictions that prevent them from following through on any of the things that, that ultimately would help them. And if we are, you know, kind of, for lack of a better, nurturing the, you know, satisfying the addiction, well, then there's not necessarily going to be, I think, you know, the long-term solutions to these problems. Because, you know, we all know, you know, we on this show, maybe we're talking about, you know, how this affects all of us as taxpayers and whatnot. But ultimately, these are individuals and families with individual and family problems. And this seems like a bad way to actually ever address the actual individual problems that have put these people in these bad situations.
Well, you end up with, at least in my opinion, you end up with a potential of normalizing serious drug use in the name of trying to get reduction of the drug use. And I, if you're going to even teeter close to this, I would think the easier answer would be is that make needles available at a very nominal price. Just a very small price point. People that want to get clean needles to at least, or the Narcan, have the ability to get access to them. But I don't think we should go anywhere near putting up or be the first city to put up an injection site in order to try to help solve this problem.
It feels like seeding any possibility of a real long-term solution for the individuals. Like, and that is the biggest problem is, you know, whenever you hear people talk about, you know, substance abuse, counseling or whatever, they always say like, the most personal choice that you make is to get clean. Like, you can't because your wife wants you to, or your mom wants you to. It's got to be it's like the most individual choice that you can make.
Yeah, if you're not ready, you're going to fail.
Right. And so the idea, it's so difficult, I think, to come up with a collective solution to such an individual problem where it's like everybody's addicted for the same reason or to the same thing.
Well, we need to do a better job, and we are because of break, but we need to do a better job of how, because it is still illegal, right? I mean, what they're doing is illegal. And that's sort of that aspect of this conversation just always seems to get forgotten. Like, you could just put them in jail. Right. But we know that's not a fix. We know that's not a solution. We know that often just exacerbates the problem rather than dealing with it. I would really like if we would have a conversation about, instead of, you know, punitive measures that involve just incarceration, you know, mandated recovery, mandated rehab, mandated, you know, treatment for these things. As long as it's going to remain illegal and a crime, there needs to be some degree of consequences when you get caught doing it. We can't just enable this kind of behavior. And that's the big concern that I have with these types of injection sites. I understand the reasoning behind them. I understand, in theory, why they could be helpful. But it is, at the end of the day, just an enabling process.
Well, I know there's been some cities, and I think it was Boston that did this. Because, first off, I agree with you. And I think that, if I'm not mistaken, if somebody gets arrested and they've got, especially on a heroin charge, there are consequences for your actions. But there's also mechanisms in place where they can go and identify and try to get some help through that whole process.
There's like drug court even sometimes right. For you too.
But I'm pretty sure that in Boston, the police departments had taken up a new policy of, if you reach out to them.
Yeah.
And you want to get a ride to, I don't know if it's a precinct or if you want to get help, they will not charge you for you going and seeking help, taking away. It's not like you're going to immediately get charged if you actually go and say, hey, look, I'm using drugs, I have drugs, I bought drugs, but I really want to get help. I want to come to you to try to start my path.
Yep. I like that.
That's a great idea. Yeah.
651-989-5855. So we do have the news quiz on the way.
Coming up in about a half an hour, some breaking news overnight. There was another massive hack data breach involving state government systems. We'll give you the details on that.
Yeah, we'll also dive into the Screamtown shutdown now has become a showdown. The owner is planning to defy Carver County after they promised to shut down the Halloween attraction based off of a closed Facebook post that he apologized for, and the apology was actually accepted.
Just